your home of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Sports Radio 97.1 The Fan.
Find the trailer, shot, score!
You are now listening to The Inside Edge with Jody Shelley and Bob McElligan. This is your inside perspective on the NHL, players, the Blue Jackets, and more.
Brought to you by Nationwide, AEP, and Ohio Health. March with us.
Here's former Jacket Jody Shelley and the voice of the Jackets, Bob McElligan.
Well, good evening and welcome to The Inside Edge. I am Bob McElligan, joined by Jody Shelley. The Blue Jackets playing last night in Montreal, losing 2-1 to the Montreal Canadiens, and don't play again until Friday here at Nationwide Arena. Jody, it was an extremely disappointing loss last night. I would put it in the same category as the Saturday loss, although last night stung a little bit more because it's tied 1-1, 2 minutes and 34 seconds left in the game. Scott Hartnell takes a penalty as he takes down P.K. Subban. All of a sudden, a power play for the fourth-ranked power play in the league going into the game. They capitalize. It's 2-1, and the Blue Jackets couldn't catch back up in the time that they had remaining. So, Saturday, they lost the 1-1 tie in the third period, but not with just that little bit of time left. But those are two games where at least going to overtime would have helped tremendously.
Yeah, big time. And I think, you hear coaches say, there's different ways to win, and I like the way we've won these last couple games. They've been different. Well, listen, there's different ways to lose, and it's even more glaring to the point that John Tortorella makes daily about managing the game, mental toughness, and you've been up close and front row for every time he said it. And it's one of those things that's a fact. And you look at the situation last night in the Bell Center in downtown Montreal. It's packed with 21,000 people. And you're 1-1 on the road with the best team in the National Hockey League. Sure, their number one goaltender's not in, but it's a 1-1 game on the road with under 3 minutes to go. Manage your shift. Feel the responsibility as the player going over the board that, hey, don't make a bad play, which is a turnover. Don't cost my team in some situation, and don't give them an advantage. And, Scott Hartnell, the veteran player, put himself in a bad spot. Subban sold the play. And Kelly Sutherland, the ref, the veteran ref, who let stuff go most of the night, made the call. Now, either way you look at it, you feel bad for Scotty. You feel like it was a cheap call because you know what P.K. Subban does at a regular basis. But look at the situation. Look what happened. It's an easy call for the ref. So either way you look at it, I think Scotty knows that it's a penalty. And they had to make the call, and that's how it was. I mean, if that was here in Columbus and they didn't make that call, we'd be livid. So.
Right, and the whole thing about it is, you're right, he made a mistake, okay? And it's where the penalty is taken and how it's taken. If it's in the defensive zone and that guy's jumping up on the rush and he's going to create a scoring chance and you grab a hold of him and he goes down, whether he forces it or he doesn't force it, you can live with that a little bit. You are in the offensive zone, and at that point, like you just said, 1-1, back off, play it safe. Because of where this team is, you can't afford a lot of those mistakes. You can't afford to forfeit points, and that's what makes it tougher to take. Where it was taken, not even how it was taken for me, where it was taken and the result that came of it, actually.
And I think there's going to be, that game, obviously, disappointing both losses. Every game that the Blue Jackets go in right now, they feel like it's a must win, and when it's a loss, it's just total discouragement and disappointment. But I still see, and I still believe, and we've been saying it, we've said it for the last couple of years that I've been here, and I remember saying it as a player, the regular season is a process, part of it is to learn. What are you made of? Go through these things, these moments, and there's going to be some that really stick. And I think the last two games, if you look at the Columbus Blue Jackets now, and you look at them 3.5 months from now, this moment, this weekend, where the disappointment of managing that game late, doing those little details in the game, it'll be something that they can kind of fall back on and remember. And I look at the Montreal Canadiens, who are hot. I look at the New York Rangers, who are hot. And when you face adversity in this league, which every team does, every team goes on a 5-6-game skid and what happened, and they have the meetings, and, you see what's your character, where's your leadership, where's the coaching, all those things come to arise. Well, the Blue Jackets got that out of the way really quick as far as falling back on their heels, getting the new coach. They're still learning, but you cannot walk in the Nationwide Arena tomorrow if you're a player with your head down. You've got to say, okay, learn and move forward. The teams that do that right now, will give themselves a chance, because these teams like the Rangers are going to face adversity, and how are they going to handle it? You know, when, if Lundqvist gets hurt, you got Carey Price here. This kid Connan is in there now. He's doing fine, but what happens when the ship starts to sink a little bit? And that's where the Blue Jackets need to stay with it, stay focused, and learn from these situations.
When John Tortorella talks about this mental toughness that, as you said, he does all the time, and he's made comments this week that there are some players on this team that still don't know how to play in these situations and to go out and grab it. Now, let me ask you, as a player, when you started with the Blue Jackets, you were a much different player than you were the one that finished with the Philadelphia Flyers. At what point do you start to grasp that and say, you know what, I'm going about this the wrong way. I'm worried about the wrong things. This is what we have to do. But when does it kind of hit you?
Well, it's funny. It's actually funny because I played one game my first year, Bob, and I played one game my last year. So I was in the exact same situation.
That's bookend. That's how you bookend a career right there.
I got lost on that. But no, when does it hit you? When you get in a playoff series or you're a player that sits in a room, and as a young guy, you'll hear the older players say, boys, we don't have opportunity after opportunity to have a team like this to go and do damage in the playoffs. Like, these don't come around very often. A great goaltender, whatever you have, that elite centerman, the group that comes together at some point in the season. So as you get older in your career, when you sit in the locker room and look around, it's always great. I remember I used to look up to Luke Richardson and Lyle Odelein, and these guys were grown men with families. You know, they were the father figures of the room. And you, when you're in the room and you realize there's none of those guys there anymore, and you see like 11 sets of eyeballs looking at you, you're like, okay, I guess this is my time to be that guy to say, hey, you know, this is a process that I've been through as a pro. It's time for me to say, hey, these windows are shrinking. And the older guys, obviously, it's shrinking more, but the league, the turnover, the change, the teammates that leave on a yearly basis, a monthly basis, you realize that and you appreciate it to another level. And I think that it could be, you know, going through struggles, going through success, having setbacks, all those things for this young group and any team in the league build something within. And that's what every team is doing. And I mean, no one's ever ran the table 82-0. No team, there's teams that are going to squeak in. There's expectations every year. And there's only going to be one Stanley Cup, and we talk about this all the time. And, you know, what's it take to win it? Well, there's adversity, and there's a lot of hard-fought stories, and you have to stick with what you're doing.
The other thing that pops in my mind, if I put myself in a seat in the stands, when we're talking about you've got to figure out how to win in these situations, get over the hump, do all these things, another legitimate question would be, the core of this team the last 2 years has gone through all this stuff. And they've put together big runs, and they got into the playoffs once, and they missed last year, but they had the best record at the latter half in the last 20 games in the league last year. What happens? Do you just forget everything over the summer, or when things go bad, do you change your entire style? What is it? I guess that's what everybody's trying to do, put their finger on it and say, how do you get that magic back?
The expectations grow on individuals and on a team. I mean, you look at this situation here. There was people talking Stanley Cup championship for this team. It's the same team. It's the same goaltender. You know, those expectations individually. As a person, you're supposed to go home at the end of the season and come back that much better, closer to that potential player that we think you would be when we drafted you when you were 18 years old. So those steps need to be taken, and they need to be taken every day. And I think sometimes as a group and as individuals, when you take the time off or you're injured for most of the year last year, you come back and have a little success towards the end, as they did as a group and individuals, and you forget how hard it is to win a game in this league. Yeah, and there was times last year in that run where they had no pressure, where they got a lot of bounces, and things were great, and it felt great. And it felt easy because the ball was rolling in their direction. It'll happen again, but it's hard. And when you're in these moments, this is where the good teams, I think, take that step as they grind out. If you watch the Rangers play, last game I watched them play, they had no business winning the game, but they got the win somehow. Somehow it came together. You look at the St. Louis game. They hung around. The Blue Jackets 1-1. They found a way to get that win. That team is still –
and they don't know. They change the lines every day. There's a lot to figure out there, is what I'm saying. But once you have it figured out, you know, you look at those wins that you've scraped together. That's where the importance is of the grind of this start of the season.
That's a good point you make about St. Louis. They haven't figured out how to do that in the regular season. Now, in the playoffs is a totally different beast for them the last couple of years because they get in the first round and all of a sudden they're scrambling and they're knocked out. But you're right. The 82 games, it seems like that core group has it figured out. We're not going to be great today. We'll be much better tomorrow. We might stink a week from now. But when it's all said and done, we're going to be in the mix.
Yeah, and that's it. And it's finding those ways and looking at each other after a game and being like, okay, we got away with one. Let's fix a couple things and be ready for the next opponent. And it's whether you win or lose. I mean, and that's the importance of being a winning team, too. It's almost even more important to address the situation. Boys, we got away with one here. And it's a leadership group. We got away with one here. We've got to tighten up in this area and this area. And we heard about Lundqvist, I think it was 10 days ago, on a 5-2 win. He called out the group saying, it's not how we win. It's not how we play. Very important to address all the situations. And when you lose, I'm telling you, we say it all the time. The flight home stinks. The dinner, everything the next day is terrible.
Food's cold. Plane's quiet.
Terrible. The music's brutal.
Where it was a bumpy ride the whole way home last night. The wind was blowing. See,
it's just... But tomorrow, they've got to start.
Indeed. And it's not going to be easy. Again, nothing is easy for this team because of the hole that they're in. But you've got two pretty good opportunities this weekend. You've got the Florida Panthers, a good team, don't get me wrong. And they won in St. Louis last night. But they've got to play in Nashville tomorrow night. You get them on the second half of a back-to-back while they're on the road traveling. And then you have to go to Philadelphia. And I know the Flyers are playing better right now, but they just lost a defenseman with a suspension today. And, hey, maybe you catch them at the right time. Bottom line, you win two out of two this weekend, everybody's happy again.
Oh, yeah. And you look at, then you might take a look at the paper again as a player and be like, you know what, boys, we're only 7 out. We're only 8 out. And it's deep hole. And you know, it's been a discouraging start, but there's still... You've got to stay right where you need to be mentally and grow. I mean, that's the thing about John Tortorella, too. He's got the focus. He's got to be banging his head off the wall last night, too. But, you know, encouraging to come to the rink, I think, tomorrow.
I hope you're right. I hope we're sitting here in the first week of April going, hey, remember back the 1st of December and that loss to the Montreal Canadiens and those back-to-back losses and how they got no points and it seemed it was over? Because you've been there before.
Yeah, I think that'd be great. And if you look at the schedule last year, there's two or three moments where it's 4 in a row, 6 in a row, 8 in a row, like too many of those long patches. 2 in a row is fine, but shut it down now and go the other way. And like you say, make up for it next weekend and then build. And the segments we talk about, November was great. October was terrible. Now, December is a new segment. It doesn't go right till the end of the month. It goes till Christmas. So there's a little bit of a sprint here for the next 3 weeks where you just lock it down. And okay, bad one last night. Learn from it, but hey, let's get the ball rolling here right away in December.
Get close to 500 by Christmas. If you really want to be in it, that's what the focus has to be to get to that point.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I always try to do something different on this show. I'll make it original. We've never had a player's dad on the show before. So... why not have a player's dad on the show for the first time? What do you think?
I think it's a great idea.
You think that's a good idea?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if most people would go that direction, but we've decided to go that direction tonight, and we've got Colin Campbell, who is not just Gregory Campbell's dad here, by the way. He's also a senior VP with the NHL. Hello, sir. How are you?
Good. How are you guys tonight?
We're doing great. Now, you're working tonight, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Work every night, except we had one night, a strange night here, actually a couple nights where we didn't work this month. It felt like Christmas time, and there's no games. That's an odd night, and there's no games in this league.
So you're at work tonight because games are going on. What's your capacity there? Everybody's watching the games. Are you watching the games too, or are people coming to you with situations that arise throughout the night?
I'm watching the game. Sometimes I'm at home where I have I can't be in the office every night, or I might not be married. but I have I'm in the house. I'm not exactly with my wife, except I peek at Columbus games more often now than I ever did. And I have six monitors at home, but when I'm in the office, I sit there with Mike Murphy and Chris King and Rod Pazman. We sit on an elevated level in the office, and we've expanded again this year our monitor system because of the expanded video review with Coach's Challenge. And I'll sit there, and we'll have you know, it's the weird part about our game is that you think you've seen it all, and then something else happens. Like, we've had this play before, but not often, but it's a question that jumps out at you, and you get a number of calls, is when in the most recent Columbus-New Jersey game, when the puck was played by Columbus, actually, I think it was Gregory.
it was.
He did touch it. He did control it. But the linesman saw it and can't call it, and the referee didn't see it. And the puck went in the net, and the referee quickly let the referee know that they missed a call, and they reversed the decision on the ice because they obviously didn't call the play dead. And so that obviously stymied a lot of calls, one from New Jersey, two from New Jersey. One of them was my boss sitting in New Jersey, Gary Bettman, and it was a mistake. It was one of those mistakes that it was the right call, it just was the wrong process. So now it goes to another level. Do we introduce that into Coach's Challenge? Because it was a goal, and the goal was taken down rightfully, but wrongfully, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So we've got interesting nights in the video room, and I always joke with the guys in there. I ask them what they do for a living, you know, and they say, well, I watch hockey. So I know you watch hockey, but what do you do for a living? Well, we watch hockey. I know you watch hockey, but what do you do for a living? And so it's like you guys, Jody, you know, Jody's still in hockey, and I'm sure he enjoys it. And that's the best part about this game. We can enjoy it. And but out of my old life coaching hockey, there were nights where you had cold beers, and then there was nights where you wanted to smash a beer bottle over someone's head. And I'm sure Torts had one of those nights last night. So this night, these nights, I don't have a lot of cold beers, but you don't want to smash a lot of bottles. There's a lot of anxious people, GMs, of course, team presidents, owners sometimes. The game is there's lots of pressure for everybody, and now it seems to start right in October. It used to kind of start in March, but now it starts in October because you can get behind the eight ball in a hurry, as Columbus did, losing the first eight games. And every night it's a battle.
Yeah, you guys, Coley, it's Jody Shelley. You guys do a great job, though, when you brief us, just even the media type, and I know you brief the players on the new rules and how you practice them a season or two prior to implement, for example, the offside rule this year, how you can coaches challenge. You guys are really in depth, which as a player, I don't know if you really appreciate that as much, but you know, it's amazing to know how in depth and how much you guys actually do see every instance of every game. And there was two that happened last night, and I just want to ask you because we have you on. The one was a 5-minute major to Calvert. It was on Calvert, and the player Yemlin got kicked out of the game, 5 of the game. So it wasn't to the head. The puck wasn't there. It was a bang-bang play. It was a quick play by the official. And then the other one was on Gregory again. He's your son, but it was a clipped high to his head. I thought it was a shot to his head. Haven't heard a thing about it all day. It kind of went under the radar. But you guys would see all instances. Is that correct?
Yeah, Jody, we see everything. We'll send things to player safety. Player safety has an office in New York, and ours is in Toronto. And we look at, like, everything. We have one monitor per game, and one individual monitors each game. And he has a color code that he puts into his notes, and the color code, it means different things for different colors, and So when we go back to that game looking for things, for example, we have a board meeting at, this coming week, and I have to brief the board on a couple of things. So we'll go back to the notes and look for certain things. We're going to talk about 3-on-3s, the coach's challenge. As far as discipline, we'll send it. We'll send a note to player safety in New York, an email, and they're watching the games like we watch the game, but what they watch them for solely is player discipline. We watch our games. Will go to Stephen Wacom, and he will go over. Well, it's like when you were a player, Shelly, you know, your coach would come in. He could show you 27 things a team after a game, but you got to be careful. You're gonna lose the player's interest. You've got to be a teacher more than a coach. And it's the same with Stephen Wacom. And we'll put down 10 or it might be a game where not a lot happens. We might send him 5 or 6 officiating points. And we might send them 20, 25 officiating points from the game. And Steven then will take those games and he'll call his officials and he'll decide what to send the official as far as the teaching tape. So we do that as far as the discipline. Gary took that off my plate after 14 years back in 2011. And it certainly was a relief. You had discipline. I think I had you once, Jody, or a couple times.
I think it was 6 times, actually, Coley.
It wasn't 6, was it?
No, it was at least 3, though.
3. I think I had you once on the bench for grabbing a guy, and I kind of felt bad. You just kind of waddled down the bench there, put your big paw out there and grabbed someone. And my boss, he said, you can't get involved from the bench. You know, and I said, well, he was just trying to help his teammate.
Yeah, our captain, Ray Whitney, was getting taken advantage of by Petrovicki, and Dave King gave me such an ear-lashing. I thought that was better than a – I would have rather done that than a suspension, I'll tell you that.
The one thing about guys, when you talk to them about their past suspension, Joe, they remember everything about that because they lose money, right? And you couldn't afford to lose a lot of money.
Oh, no, that was tough. That.
So we'll send it to them, and they do – Stetson Cantal and his team in New York will do what they want to do. And I used to have an open line, and one of the things I recommended to Brendan Shanahan and Stetson Cantal when I give up the discipline job was there should be a 48-hour moratorium because everyone's calling, particularly in the playoffs. It becomes a real competitive game between teams and they're calling to get players suspended. And that's where it really becomes an issue in the playoffs. You know, when you take one player out of a series. So I suggested that no one should be able to call in the first 48 hours. Now, having said that, we don't have that with officiating. So we get lots of calls in about 30 seconds. That's the beauty of cell phones these days, or, any reviews. I don't know how long you've been there, Bob. Jody might have remembered this. We had a few reviews, and it seems like every year one team kind of gets the short end. And one year Columbus was getting the short end of it, and I think it was a Manny Malhotra call in, in Dallas. And Hitch, after the game, was coaching Columbus, and every question they asked Hitch about the game, well, Hitch, it was a pretty good game. We won the game. Hitch, how did you think your defense played? We won the game. What about the goaltending? We won the game. He wasn't happy with a call we made on Malhotra, so that's all Hitch's answer was afterwards. Every question was, we won the game. And then next thing we heard in Columbus was the fans were chanting, Toronto sucks.
Oh, boy.
Sucks. So it can be a lively night in a room there, but the one thing, as I said before, we're watching hockey, we're talking hockey, and that's a great job to be able to do that. The one thing that I did take note of when you guys were talking to a player's father and who played hockey, you could have been talking to one of 3 guys on the Columbus.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know if there's ever been a team that's had 3 players whose fathers all played in the NHL.
Yeah, you're right. We could have Mike Foligno on. We could have Warren Reichel on. Or we could have you. So we picked you. You should feel honored.
I do. I think I don't know who had the most penalty minutes. I know Mike Foligno had the most goals. But it might be a toss-up. She had the most penalty minutes of those three fathers.
You know, since you bring that up, and we're joined by NHL Senior Executive VP and Director of Hockey Operations, Colin Campbell, your son has played in this league for a long time now, but what is it? What's it like for you? I'm sure there's a sense of pride because you played and you coached, and he grew up in it, and now he's playing in it right now. So how do you walk that sense of pride? And also, it's a business where, you know, you work in the main office, and he, I don't want to say works for the other side because you guys work in conjunction, the players in the league, but, you know, it's kind of separate factions there.
Well, the one thing that I always think about is when I was a coach and I coached the Rangers, I'm wondering, you know, what parents thought of me. Now, you know, you just had to do your job and win games, and having a son then coming up the same route, playing junior hockey, playing the American League, playing the NHL, you live every moment with your son, your children, when they're pursuing whatever they're pursuing, and in Gregory's case, it's a career in the NHL, and so knowing the game a little bit better, I would think, than some parents, having been around and coached, you know, every little nuance, you want them to succeed. You want them to do the right thing on penalty kills, on changes, on the shift length, on everything. And it's harder watching your son play than playing yourself or coaching, I find. And you want them to succeed. You enjoy when they succeed. I won a Stanley Cup as an assistant coach in New York, but it was much more gratifying when Gregory won the Stanley Cup in Boston. And I had gone to a finals in a Memorial Cup. Actually, it was the first year they had the Memorial Cup. And I was in Ottawa, and I played for Peterborough. We lost in the final game, and Gregory went to the Memorial Cup, and it almost was that much more satisfying. They won the Memorial Cup when he was with the Kitchener Rangers. So it's there's highs and lows, and Jody, you know that in an NHL career, it's great to play, and every time you make a level, get into the NHL, you just want more. You want to play more. You want to win more. And it's that much more harder when you're a parent. You want your son to have success, and when they lose, you feel the pain too. And I thought that was all over when I joined the league, and I didn't have to worry about losses. But now when your son's playing again, you have to worry about losses.
Well, Colin, thank you so much for coming on with us tonight. We really do appreciate it. The little look inside the league, and hey, Gregory's doing a great job here too, and really helping to nurture some of the young guys that have been forced on his line here in the last couple of weeks. So it's really a pleasure to have him around, and I hopefully you're going to get that feeling of pride because the Blue Jackets will start putting some wins together here in the next couple of weeks.
Well, they've been playing pretty good hockey here the last 3 or 4 weeks. Torts came, and I can see little areas of the game where Torts is Torts, and knowing Torts as a coach, you know, he pushes players in the right direction, and line changes, shift changes, work efforts, penalty killing, defensemen moving the puck. They're doing all the little things that add up to wins, and now you just got to win those close games, and that's where you got to learn how to win, and I think that's what Torts is trying to teach the Blue Jackets right now. So hopefully they can get there. It's a long hill right now, a struggle, but it hopefully happens.
Well, we'll let you get back to work, and maybe you can take away a goal or give a goal to somebody tonight, all right?
Well, we'll try to be fair. That's all we try to do, be fair.
That's all we ask. That's all anybody ever asks. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Colin.
Rivalry night. Let's try that again. Rivalry night in the NHL. Rangers-Islanders playing that game for the first time at Barclays Center and not at the Nassau Coliseum. We'll talk about that coming up in the next segment. The voting started for the All-Star game, fan voting. I said this yesterday on my CBJ in 30 podcast, which you can find by following me on Twitter or going to BlueJackets.com or on the Blue Jackets app. This is great. They opened the fan voting. Now for 2 months we get to talk about All-Star voting. It'll wear thin on me. I don't care that much about it.
You don't follow it on a daily basis?
No,
you don't have like a ticker?
No, I don't. But what is very interesting about it is John Scott is the early leader. He's the early clubhouse leader in voting for the All-Star game, which, well, you know, John Scott is 6 foot. What is he? 6'8" before he puts the skates on, Jody?
Yeah, 6'8". That's all.
Mm-hmm. And he's a specialty player.
I love that. I hope he gets in. You know what? Did you see that All-Star game last year?
Yeah.
Slow. Yes. Perfect for John Scott. His speed.
Right. That's a good point. In his reach.
Let him go.
I can see him toe dragging around a couple of D-men.
If the fans want him to be there, let him go. I heard great stories about, Bob Probert scored 30 goals in 1 year, and he went to the All-Star game, and every superstar that went was like, oh, where's Bob? Hi, Mario, whatever. Hey, where's Bob Probert? I want to meet Bob Probert. So, yeah, I mean, John Scott wouldn't go. I can relate because when I was in Philadelphia, I got 49,000 votes to go to the All-Star game. And there was a point where it was like, people were like, oh, you might actually go. And I'm like, I'm not going to the All-Star game. It's for All-Stars. But whatever. It's 3-on-3, John Scott. It'd be fun to watch, wouldn't it? I mean, I would be entertained to see what would happen to him out there in the 3-on-3. Let's not get too serious about this.
Would you really have not gone?
No, I wouldn't have gone.
Really?
Yeah.
If you had that many people vote you in to go, you wouldn't have gone?
Polite? Well, maybe I would have.
I mean, why? So, wait a minute. Because you don't feel like you belong there, you're going to let down 50,000 people, 100,000 people that voted for you to go, you wouldn't go?
Maybe I would.
You would have went.
You think?
Yeah. No, I don't know. Maybe, well, somebody would have had to talk you into it. At the time, I could have called you and said, just go to the game. Just go enjoy it. But who knows where John Scott's going to wind up in the balloting. But I think it's kind of funny.
Yeah, it's
not
funny.
It's kind of fun. Not funny. It's fun.
It's fun. People getting all up in arms about it. Whatever. Relax.
Exactly.
If he gets voted in, he gets to go to the it's the All-Star game. It's like shinny pickup hockey.
Right. It's a weekend to go hang out with the guys, and not the normal guys that you're with every day, right? The other stars in the league. Now,
in
a similar story, Jaromir Jagr is getting votes, and Jagr tweeted this out today. He said, fans, I appreciate your votes for All-Star game, but 3-on-3 would kill me, and I don't want to die yet. Thank you for understanding.
Attaboy, Yogs.
Now, you know him very well. What do you think about that?
I think he's smart. He needs the break. He needs his body to rest, and he doesn't need to be at the All-Star game. He's done it many, many, many times.
Yes, he has.
He's calculated, old Yogs. So?
Now, okay, but I did see where somebody said, what a great strategy to get more votes by telling people not to vote for you.
Oh, really?
You don't think he's doing that, right?
No, no, no chance. No chance.
Although I wouldn't mind seeing him in the 3-on-3 format.
Now, if he gets number one in voting, he's the type of guy that would go. Like, if it's like that glaring that, hey, everybody wants you there, you know. But he's just
And this
calculated.
Is normally this is Smart. Normally the point of the conversation where you say, well, it could be his last year of playing, and it would be nice to see him in the game.
In your radio voice.
Yeah, right. and it would really be nice to see him show up there and get the appreciation he's deserved in all these years. But guess what? Who knows when this guy's going to quit playing? He's in great shape.
Yeah, no, why would he stop now?
I don't see any reason for him to stop now.
He's
still a contributor.
He went to the KHL, and he came back, and he's having an impact. Gerard Gallant loves him. Veteran player, skill, on his own program, but he just wants to win.
On his own program, but with a work ethic that is contagious.
You know how good he was for Jake Voracek? Jake Voracek, when he was here, didn't understand what it took to be a pro. And then Jagr is just the ultimate, like, in the sense of, he's on his own. I wouldn't suggest his program to other people, but he knows what works for him. And he does it every single day. And he does it like at 10 p.m. He's out running hills and wearing weight vests and doing these crazy things. But it works for him. And Jake was a guy that went with Jagr. Quick story. He used to get the key to the rink in Philadelphia, the practice rink. And when the rink schedule was done for the day, usually 10:45 at night, Jagr would go. And sometimes it was his girlfriend passing him pucks. She was in shoes, passing him pucks. And he was on the ice in the tracksuit, and he would turn, do like tight turns and shooting or work on passing. And he had Jake out there a few times. I went out there one time with him, maybe two times. And it was like, it was all, we called it the Yager Hockey School. And it was great. It was so great. Fascinating guy.
Oh, my goodness. So
but he doesn't vote him in.
He doesn't want to go to the All-Star game. At Fitz, this show's like a crazy train.
It sure is.
Off the rails. I mentioned earlier, it is rivalry night in the NHL. Rangers are playing the Islanders tonight, and they're playing at Barclays Center in Brooklyn because that's where the Islanders have moved to this year. I just wondered how much that changes things because you know better than I do. Going into that old Nassau Coliseum with that fan base and those people who were just on you from the minute that you walked in the door. We haven't played at Barclays Center yet, but I can't imagine that the atmosphere is the same there.
No. They've had ushers that have been there for 40 and 50 years at Nassau Coliseum. It's 40 years probably. It's that place. I mean, it's their, you're on their turf. You know, like you talk about home ice advantage. When you're in Nassau Coliseum, you're on their turf. When you're there as a Ranger, I mean, there's Ranger fans. There's fights in the stands. It's an all-out, just, it's almost like a street fight on ice.
It is a street fight.
Ah, they're just cheering for each other. It's great. It'll be different. But
it will be different.
I can build it up.
And again, we haven't played there yet, so is it going to be an overall good different or a bad different? I guess time will tell as it goes along. Other games tonight, Toronto is at Winnipeg. The Leafs are already up in that game. 1-0 is the score in that, and the young rookie goaltender is getting his second straight start, is he not?
Yeah, he is. He's got his shutout streak continued. He started the Leafs goaltender, Spark. He's the first Maple Leaf goalie to have a shutout in his first career game, I think.
And that is, and think about that. I mean, there's a franchise that has been around for a long time, and this Sparks kid comes up and has a shutout in the very first game that he plays. So good on him. Hey, it's all about goaltending, right?
We just
saw Mike Condon last night play very well. He did what he had to do for the Montreal Canadiens, and that's all the teams expect. When you come up and they need you, and you just made a big save as we're talking about it right now.
Sparks, yeah, that was – yeah, Condon, and I think he's buddies with this guy, Sparks. They're from the Boston area, so – interesting. Yeah, it is about goaltending. It's about confidence too, Bob. I mean, that's, you know, a goaltender that can make that save and keep your team in it, it gives you confidence. But a goaltender that just lets in leaky goals, it when you lose that confidence, the whole team's affected. That's why it's such a pivotal position.
And that's where the Blue Jackets were early in the season when Sergei Bobrovsky said he had zero confidence. Well, now he's back to 100%. Oilers are playing at home tonight against the Boston Bruins. Speaking of goaltending, Cam Talbot, they get him from the Rangers, right? The Edmonton Oilers during the summer. Mm-hmm. They thought that was a cure to their goaltending ails. Well, guess what? That's only one guy, and if you're not playing, and this goes to what we've seen this year, if you're not playing good team defense, doesn't matter how good your goalie is, you're still going to have problems there, right? So, the Oilers, in a situation, they replaced the GM, they replaced the coach. They got the number one overall pick, who's hurt right now, Connor McDavid. But now they're talking about, well, if something doesn't happen, we just don't start winning more games here by Christmas. We might see a trade just to shake it up. I don't know if that's just media or if that's Peter Chiarelli. But there's a lot of talk there now all of a sudden.
Well, they're starting to figure out what they have there. And you know, what do they have there?
They've got a lot of the same pieces.
Yeah, they've got a lot of high-end skill up front, and they've got a couple young defensemen that they're hoping do bigger things than they probably can definitely at this point of the game. Darnell Nurse is a kid that's, I mean, right out of major junior, he's in there right now playing for them, and you know, their leadership, they've got Mark. I mean, I love Mark Letestu, but they've got, I mean, they're not sold on their captain. I think he handed in his captaincy this year, Andrew Farron. So I don't know. They're still a few years away, but boy, they've got some nice talent in the cupboard, don't they?
No, they do. They have good talent, and at some point, the prevailing thought is they're going to have to deal one or two of those forwards to get the defense looking for. But they can afford to do that because they've stockpiled
those
guys.
Chip, yeah.
You know, Jordan Eberle is the guy's name that keeps on coming up. Time it's happened for years, and he's a good player.
he
wouldn't be a bad player to have.
No, he'd be great. But if you could get a Nugent Hopkins or something like that, that would be. That's what they're trying to do. I'm sure teams are trying to just lowball them because they're in that tough situation.
Sure, and that's where everybody is right now. That's why it's so hard to make any kind of a deal, and that'll change as it goes on this season. One other game tonight, the late game, is in Anaheim where the Ducks are taking on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Blue Jackets going to face the Florida Panthers on Friday night here at Nationwide Arena. A pair of home games, home and road, and then back at home. They're going to play the bulk of their schedule here the next couple of weeks at home, which is going to be a good thing, I think.
Yes, it's been a crazy schedule. There's been a lot of come here and play at Nationwide, and then away for quick little trips. And it's still the same, I think, right until the Christmas break. There's still a patch of quite a few road games, but need to make hay at home. It was a tough October. They didn't get their first home win until November, and there's been some positives in November, but they've really got to, just like we said at the top of the show, get things going in the right direction here. That game Friday night, Bob, I wanted to mention there's a toy drive that night in conjunction with Channel 10. You can bring your new unwrapped toys to Nationwide Arena and drop them off, and underprivileged kids or kids that might not get toys this Christmas will be able to have a gift. So bring your Christmas spirit to Nationwide Arena, bring your unwrapped toy, and bring a smile to some kids' faces here. That's Friday night against the Panthers.
Friday night, 7 o'clock game. That'll do it for the Inside Edge on 97.1 The Fan.
This has been the Inside Edge with Jody Shelley and Bob McGillicuddy.
And I got two words for you. Game over.
Brought to you by Nationwide, AEP, and Ohio Health. March with us.